I am your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator with the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. Today, I'm talking with Laurel Sherman, Forester for OSU Extension, and I'm looking forward to this conversation about forest health and support out there for woodland managers. Welcome to Conservation Spotlight, Laurel.
It's great to be here.
Laurel, when we at Polk SWCD got word that OSU Extension had hired a new forester for their program, we were so excited to meet you. And since then, we've been lucky to partner with you on our Wildfire Ready community events and building that program for Polk County. We're also supporting an emerald ash borer workshop that you're working on for the spring. More to come on that. But anyway, it's been a pleasure to work with you thus far, and I wanted our listeners to learn more about you and the work that you do. So let's dive in and see the woodlands through your lens. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, Laurel, and what drove you toward a career in forestry and natural resources?
I grew up in southwestern Pennsylvania near the West Virginia border, so the Appalachian Mountains and the hardwood forests. And I spent a lot of time in the woods. My neighbors used to think I was always running away to be found in the woods, but really I was just absolutely captivated by the forest ecosystem and would spend hours flipping rocks and watching birds in the canopy and whatnot. Unsurprisingly, I took that with me into college and ended up studying wildlife biology at the University of Vermont, and quickly realized that the most efficient way to enhance wildlife habitat in these forest ecosystems that I was in was through forestry practices. So I started taking some forestry classes and just went down the rabbit hole, and here I am today.
Well, we're so lucky to have you here in the Willamette Valley. What is your role at OSU Extension? Can you tell us more about what you're doing there in that program?
So I am an extension forester. I service Benton, Linn, and Polk counties, so the Central Willamette Valley. And so basically my role is to act as a bridge between the latest natural resource related research and innovation coming out of Oregon State University and forest owners, foresters, other natural resource professionals. So, if there's new technologies being used in logging operations or reforestation practices, at Oregon State University, I'm, able to relay that information quickly to folks on the ground. Also, understanding things like the new Private Forest Accord, which is forest practices regulations, and new emerging risks with forest health, like of course, the emerald ash borer and Mediterranean oak borer, which I believe we will talk more about.
Thank you. So are the people that are reaching out to you and wanting to connect, are they mostly private woodland owners?
Yes, I would say I work primarily with woodland owners, small woodland owners, but also I do work with folks who are curious about owning forested property, want to know more about what that process is, what forest management is all about. I also work with a lot of partners like the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, watershed councils. We put on a lot of joint programming, working with state agency folks, Oregon Department of Forestry, Oregon Department of Agriculture to help landowners. But yeah, I kind of work with all different types of people to help serve the small woodland owners and folks aspiring to be woodland owners.
Wonderful. And so, what are some of the concepts in woodland management that landowners seem the most concerned with these days?
So there's a long list of concerns, of course. But so the Oregon Small Woodlands Association chapters that I work with actually recently administered a survey to their membership to identify which topics were of most highest importance to them. So that was pretty telling. I think it sums it up nicely. The top three were invasive species management, wildlife habitat, and forest health. Of course, fire fuels reductions comes up quite a bit, but we at the Oregon State University Extension Service, we have a fire program. So I tend to work less in the fire realm. The fire program handles a lot of that. But yeah, so I'd say those are the three big ones. Some of the other ones that came up were succession or family planning, oak restoration and management, and pre-commercial thinning, but the top three: invasive species, wildlife, and forest health.
And so, how do you help the landowners to address concerns like wildlife and invasive species and other concerns that they're bringing to you?
So, wildlife, I have a background in that, of course. So, that tends to be my specialty. And I often do site visits to walk people's properties with them, figure out what their goals are for creating wildlife habitat, what types of species they want to see there, and how to create that. So, that could be something like creating snags, which are standing dead trees, or planting berry-producing shrubs, and sometimes working with folks who are doing harvest operations to put those types of structures in during the operations for more cost-effective nature. In terms of invasive species management, lots of partnerships. So the partners I work with have more capacity on the ground in this realm, whereas I tend to focus more on education and directing folks to the right group to get technical and financial assistance. And then forest health, also a lot of site visits. There's a lot of folks calling and emailing asking why their trees are dying. And so we'll try to identify or diagnose what's going on there and direct them to resources for management. I'm on all sorts of statewide and local task forces and cooperatives that offer trainings and really give me the most up-to-date information so that I can relay this to landowners in a pretty timely manner.
Wonderful. Well, let's talk a little bit more about those invasive species, which includes insects as well. A little over 2 years ago, so the fall of 2022, I did an interview for this podcast with Wyatt Williams with the Oregon Department of Forestry. And the focus of our conversation was emerald ash borer, or EAB. He told us how to ID EAB and signs of infestation and what to do if we think we've made a positive ID. So, flash forward to 2+ years later, I know there have been some big changes in the spread, but also in the knowledge and control strategies. Could you give us a little update on emerald ash borer?
Sure. Yeah. So there have been additional or new and additional detections since 2 years ago. I guess it's all new since then. So the detections have led to a quarantine in Washington, Yamhill, Clackamas, and Marion counties. And so you can't move any at Oregon ash wood outside of those or into those counties. So we are expecting a lot of mortality of ash in the coming 5 to 10 years. I believe the Oregon Department of Agriculture has said it's expected to be something like a 99% mortality rate. So really the strategy now is more slowing the spread and figuring out what to replant with and how to utilize the wood after the emerald ash borer comes through. And so, we have to be prepared for that as it will spread into additional counties. So there's no really There's no effective way to completely eradicate it. However, if you have Oregon ash in your yard or in local city parks, there are effective treatments for individual or small groups of trees. So there's a insecticide called emamectin benzoate, and that is the most effective treatment. They inject it into the tree's cambium, which is where the water and nutrients are flowing up and down the tree. And it protects that tree for 2 to 3 years. So you'd have to continue to inject it every 3 years, but it is highly effective. So I think we're going to see a lot of city parks using that. And then there was a, or is going to be, a parasitic wasp release. The parasitic wasps are teeny tiny. They don't affect humans at all. but they do affect the emerald ash borer, and so it's expected to slow the spread, but not eradicate.
And my understanding is that ash trees are found, in riparian areas, typically along streams, rivers. So you mentioned other species that we could replant. What would those be?
So it's kind of a tricky question because the Oregon ash occupies such a important ecological niche, but so it depends on the soil type, but willow and alder and black cottonwood are a few examples of some things that can be found in that riparian zone where their roots are often saturated. The Oregon State University Extension Service recently, I think it's a 2023 publication, and it's a publication on alternatives for Oregon ash and riparian areas, and it was put out just for the purpose of what do people plant and after the EAB comes through. So that it's I think the authors are Kroll and Shaw. That's a really excellent publication to help guide landowners and managers for replanting.
Thanks, Laurel. I'll include a link to that interview with Wyatt Williams too, if you'd like to hear more about EAB and how to ID. But OSU has some wonderful resources with EAB lookalikes too, and how to report it. Just a quick update, if you're just joining us, I'm here with Laurel Sherman with OSU Extension, and we've been talking about forest health and woodland management. And you're listening to Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. Okay, Laurel, let's not miss this other invasive insect that has come up. I attended an Oak and Prairie Summit recently, and there was a brief presentation about the Mediterranean oak borer, or MOB, as it's called. So I feel discouraged to hear that there's another invasive insect that we need to be on alert for. What can you tell us about MOB and how it could affect Oregon white oaks?
So the Mediterranean oak borer, I'll just tell you a little bit about it first. It's an ambrosia beetle, and we have many native species of ambrosia beetle in Oregon. This one is not native. But they even though the species is a little destructive, they do have a very cool life history. So the beetle actually has a structure called a mycangia that carries fungal spores within that structure. So when they bore into the wood of a tree, they're actually inoculating the tree with these fungal spores. And that's because the larvae of the Mediterranean oak borer actually feed on the fungal mycelium. So when they burrow into the tree, their larval galleries are filled with this mycelium, and the larvae eat the mycelium. And so the beetle is actually not what's killing the oak tree. The fungus growing in those larval galleries are actually causing a wilting disease in white oaks and red oaks. So we know that they can kill Oregon white oak and several of the red oaks. We're not sure about black oaks yet. And that's because we really don't know much about this species. It's an emerging issue. There's a lot of research going on around mortality rate, what species they infect, treatments. So we really just don't have a lot of answers for folks yet. There are trapping efforts all over Western Oregon to look at its distribution. So we don't even really know where it is yet, other than a few locations. But yeah, we do have some good signs and symptoms, fact sheets available for landowners who might have oaks on their property and are concerned about monitoring for it. But generally, you can see the black stained larval galleries in the wood if a branch breaks off or if you cut the tree or a branch off. That black staining is that fungus. And they leave a pale boring dust called frass, and it'll collect on the bark of the trees, especially in cobwebs at the bottom. And you'll see dieback of an entire section of the oak tree, not just individual small branches, but a one whole big branch will completely die rapidly. So it's pretty it's easier to diagnose than other insect species, but again, we just don't know too much about it.
And has it been reported in Polk County or neighboring counties?
So they being the Oregon Department of Agriculture and Forestry, did a massive trapping effort this summer, but I have not looked at the data yet, so I don't have an answer. I'll try to find out. But prior to this trapping data, no, there were no detections. I'm not sure if that's changed yet.
Okay. Well, more to come on that. And Laurel, I know in this line of work that we do, it really takes collaboration. What are some ways that you're working with local partners? I know you mentioned some agencies, earlier on in the interview. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the work that you're doing with them?
Yeah, so since we just talked about invasive species, this is a topic that really it's brought everyone together. We all have to work together across ownership boundaries to really have an effective treatment for these species who don't recognize, these imaginary lines. So with the Emerald Ash Borer and Mediterranean Oak Borer, there's just all the state agencies, soil and water conservation districts, even city parks and smaller entities. We all meet monthly. There's task forces. We share information and updates. We provide resources to each other when possible. So for example, I've hosted several Emerald Ash Borer monitoring and just trainings and workshops for landowners. And these agencies have come down in support of that. We're really just trying to most effectively get the information out as widespread as we can. This is a little bit of a different type of partnership. Just yesterday, I was at the High School Educators Conference. And this is a gathering of all different partners. It's put on by the Oregon Forest Resources Institute and the Oregon Natural Resource Education Program. And the goal is to work together and brainstorm innovative ways to teach natural resources to high schoolers, which is really cool and a much more lighthearted way of working in a partnership. But yeah, I guess there's just endless partnerships to talk about. We work with county level soil and water conservation districts to identify grants for invasive species removal, and identify locations that are high priority. But yeah, I could go on and on. I think this work really is built on the foundation of partnerships.
Absolutely. So speaking of partnerships, we need community involvement. How can our listeners get involved with your work and support forest health?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think keeping up on what's going on is crucial. And so some of the ways you can do that through my work, our program, I put out a monthly newsletter for Benton, Linn, and Polk counties. It's called The Needle, and it outlines educational and collaborative and volunteer opportunities. I would say right now it's the best way to get information about events. Often they're free, so join that. And we also have a listserv, which allows folks to talk back and forth with each other if we have volunteer opportunities or if folks have questions. That's an effective way to get involved. Because I'm somewhat new in this position, we're working on creating more of a network of volunteers, like some of the other extension groups have. And so I think if you join the newsletter and keep up with that, that's where we're going to announce any sort of volunteer opportunities. There's lots of free tours and educational workshops through that as well. So that's a great way to come to those events and meet other people, meet other extension agents, and get more information on how you can get more involved.
Thank you. Earlier you mentioned small woodland associations. I was just wondering if you could talk to our listeners a little bit more about what that is, and how they could get involved.
So the Oregon Small Woodlands Association is a statewide program, but it has county chapters, and we actually have Polk County is a rather active chapter. They host all kinds of tours on different, so like how to on pre-commercial thinning, how to thin your forest, tours of mills, invasive species removal, herbicide, just pretty much anything you want to know, you could approach this chapter if you join it, and they'll figure out how to put together a workshop focusing on that. So I highly recommend joining your local county chapter. It's a great way, it's another great way to meet folks, and learn from them.
Yeah, there's so many different ways to get involved and learn more about our forests and woodlands. Laurel, if you could ask the community to make one change in relation to the work that you do, what would that be?
So, I would say slow down and spend more time outside looking at trees and wildlife. I think it's a lot easier to understand what's happening in our local ecosystems and how they function if we spend a lot of time in them. And that becomes very important for figuring out when something's wrong, when something needs attention. And it's also easy to protect and care for the things that we love. And we achieve that by really just spending time outside. And I know that's easier for some people than others, but even just looking out your window at the birds and in the tree canopy can really build your understanding of how our ecosystems are working.
I love that. Yeah, I have been on my walks lately using Google Lens and iNaturalist and the Merlin bird app to better understand what's around me. And I think you really grow to appreciate it and invest in it, everything in our environment more.
Yes, those are all great apps to learn from and just really go down the rabbit hole of the diversity of species we have around us.
For sure. Laurel, I want to thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yes, it was great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I've been talking with Laurel Sherman, forester with OSU Extension. I hope you leave this conversation today feeling inspired in your own way to contribute to the health of our ecosystem here in the Willamette Valley. And I'm your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator for the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Conservation Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed our conversation today. Every effort matters, and together we can make a difference in conserving our natural resources. If you would like more information on this topic, please visit OSU Extension's forestry website, forestry.oregonstate.edu/forestry-and-natural-resources. That's a mouthful, so I will be sure to include a link with this episode. You can also go to our website, polkswcd.com, and our Facebook page for resources on how you can contribute to local conservation efforts. Also, sharing this podcast with others is a great way to spread awareness and encourage positive action. Coming up, we have our collaborative conservation community meeting open to all that want to give their input about natural resources in Polk County. That will be at Monmouth City Hall at 1 p.m. on January 31st. You can find out more on our website. We hope to see you there. And if you liked what you heard here on Conservation Spotlight, tune in next month to KMUZ at 100.7 or 88.5 FM, the third Wednesday every month during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening, and keep up the conservation conversation.